Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 28th day of March, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And you know what, folks? It's another one of those interesting news days where what we're really seeing is the aftermath, almost like the vacuum after the explosion, of a major, I would say, catastrophic, arguably, almost certainly, intentional event. Like the takedown and take out of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, along with the Port of Baltimore itself, trapping all kinds of ships, probably hundreds of millions of dollars worth, right there in the bay, shutting down one of the biggest hazardous materials handling facilities in the nation, and arguably representing a major national security incident, which, of course, those that set it up aren't about to even admit, much less acknowledge as a possibility, which itself speaks volumes. But if you believe that TWA Flight 800 so many years ago was taken out, no, not by a missile, but by the spontaneous combustion of its center fuel tank, never happened before or since. Likewise, three buildings, not two, were taken out by two planes in New York City, defying the laws of physics. Well, then I guess you're just primed to believe that this great big boat just lost power, not once, but twice, suddenly veered right into the support column for one of the most strategic bridges in the nation, and shazam, who could have thought it? Just took out everything instantly. What are the odds? Well, I guess they're about the same as the odds of the wrong guy that never came out of his basement suddenly getting all the votes after all of the polling places across the country were mysteriously but simultaneously shut down in all of the critical swing states. Yeah, what are the odds? And if you believe that, well, we're going to have more to sell you. Just buckle your seatbelts and stay tuned. So, yeah, folks, the news today is going to be a bit different in character than before the latest unbelievable series of unexplainable, amazing coincidences that just happened to have a mega container ship hitting the literal bullseye on that bridge. Imagine turning out the lights in a bar and having not one but several drunk guys suddenly being able to hit bullseye after bullseye on the dartboard. Yeah, it does take a special kind of credulity nowadays to drink the waste stream Kool-Aid. But hey, if you took five or so Zyklon B injections, who are you to complain? So let's kick things off in that vein today with an update courtesy of Laura Logan and the Gateway Pundit that says, in the aftermath of that unbelievable set of coincidences, yeah, sure, that resulted in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge early Tuesday morning in Baltimore, questions, who'd have thought it, are being raised about the nature of that incident. The bridge was a crucial artery for the Baltimore Beltway, known as I-695, and it saw a huge section plummet into the Patapsco River after a cargo ship, one way or the other, managed to collide with one of its major support columns. As we talked about yesterday, seasoned journalist Laura Logan, in a statement Tuesday, alleged the incident was not an accident, obviously, but rather a strategic attack. And that claim gathered further attention as she joined Steve Bannon on the War Room to discuss the implications of the bridge's demolition. And she asked this key question then. Why is anybody in a so-called position of authority coming to the mic and telling the country that it's not, it couldn't be terrorism, when in fact your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And in fact, anybody with a brain would not rule out something so obvious until there was actual evidence proving otherwise. She continued to explain that her sources, a mix of active duty and retired personnel from various agencies, believe the bridge collapse was a cyber attack targeting a major supply chain corridor. By Thursday, she had an update, referencing analyses from experts in various fields, including behavioral analytics, counterterrorism, and national security, who offered a combined two-pronged theory about the bridge collapse. And as she put it on X, analysis from specialists in those fields have said the following. This is their view. Based on their training experience, this was two types of operation. One, penetration testing, where they probe and test to identify vulnerabilities in our responses and defenses, sick. And two, a shaping operation to set the conditions and prepare the battlefield for a potential, and I would say at this point, pretty much inevitable future event. The concern is that other critical infrastructure and disruptions and or hits recently that appeared to be independent, isolated events might just not be after all. For example, remember that Ohio chemical disaster, the train derailment? Which was exacerbated by idiots deciding, hey, let's just make some dioxin, start a conflagration to burn all the minor poisons into something far worse, and contaminate the entire region with deadly poison. That was followed by a string of amazing coincidental food processing plant and etc. fires. When taken in isolation, they may not appear to be that significant, but you put them all together, they could, say the experts, indicate shaping or stacking operations, paving the way for an even bigger event, wherein they do any number of these types of operations together. simultaneously or bang, bang, bang in short order. And guess what, folks? They have battalions, at least 7 or so communist Chinese troops alone, say various experts like General Flynn and anybody that can say, hey, what are the odds if you got 10 million invaders crossing into the country without any kind of vetting whatsoever that, oh, even 1% of them just might be terrorists or military or special forces from other not-so-friendly powers, and that would include nowadays the swamp. Well, if a criminal in the White House with his finger on the nuclear button isn't enough, that could certainly paralyze what's left of the United States. So the critical question that we should all be asking, because government won't, is when will they trigger a multiple episode that can cause that paralysis effect? Some of the indicators, she said, and how many such incidents have occurred within a relatively short timeline, and what they see as a departure from what is normal are key to understanding it. And her experts believe without question that those in charge will make sure any investigation into the bridge crash, quote, goes nowhere quick. One of the goals here is to give the public mental anesthesia while they test this using train derailments or exposures to chemicals like in Ohio, when they told everyone to shelter indoors. And then they asked questions like, did they comply? Is this going to be successful at deceiving and causing the desired behavioral change? Hey, remember they all drank the Kool-Aid, took the shots, and wore the face diapers, didn't they? Then they use the media to create the assumptive narrative. They don't want the facts analyzed because they don't want people processing or even thinking about what the truth might be. Because truth naturally leads to questions that simply must not be asked. And that's why the Supreme Court is good if they'll just cover up anything associated with the Ministry of Truth here. Remember that? But it would be foolish and naive, she continues, at the expense of national security, not to question Big Brother's narrative on the Baltimore Bridge demolition, given the level of corruption in spheres of power and influence in this country today. What with many years of experience in spoofing, that's a tactic used in cyber warfare to hack into someone's system and deceive in order to achieve the desired outcome, they recognize that multiple indicators watching the video tell them that it was the GPS signal that was likely hacked, leading them to believe that perhaps they weren't as close to the bridge as they were, and it may be why in the video you see the crazy lean to port and then hard to starboard as they realize they weren't on course in spite of the GPS indicating that they were. In information warfare terms, here are some of the tactics you can see being used now that some of you might recognize. Number one, engineered complexity. Now, as an engineer, folks, this really resonates with yours truly. This is where they throw in nonsensical variables, aka information, but it's really not. It's disinfo. That's a term that they use to lie to you about what it is that they're doing to you. And it's engineered to distract, all designed to keep you from serially processing multiple channels and give you processing overload, preventing people from toggling the different channels of information, i.e., they create decoys to distract you from the truth. Number two, they're trying to reframe the issue by focusing on details that don't matter, by throwing in variables that aren't relevant to the main equation. I remember seeing the thing, could it be tainted fuel? Oh, yeah, you blithering idiots. That's a great explanation, right? Even if the fuel was tainted, what are the odds that you can somehow manage to hit that bullseye with a 100,000-ton ship, in spite of people maybe trying to avoid it? Those are the kind of distractions that are ultimately just plain too stupid for stupid. Says the PSYOP-related piece here, common sense, skepticism, and intelligence are huge overlays, all of which get in the way of manipulating human behavior, so they have to learn to analyze how you can create channel overload while people try to toggle or handle different channels of information, things like the speed of the boat, temperature of the water, etc. Baffle them with bullshit is a term you've probably heard. Number three, they need folks to be loaded up with enough variance to create that channel overload, so you create an error that then they can use to discredit you. One way is to create doubt in yourself, most effective because then people make themselves less efficient when your brain is processing the self-doubt and it propagates into the future. Population, bottom line, is so much easier to dupe today than it ever was 20 years ago. And the dumbing down of the mass population is certainly a big key on that score, folks. If they'll believe that this last rigged election was honest and even the most secure in American history, in spite of all the dead people that voted over and over again, and the electronic paper trails that aren't paper and that they're not going to show you anyway, and that the vaccine is safe and effective, come on. Be honest, what can't they sell you? Especially if it's deadly poison. And I'll paraphrase now the last sentence in this piece. The incident, to put it mildly, at the Francis Scott Key Bridge should no longer be viewed solely as a tragic accident, an incredible series of unlikely events all coming together perfectly, as was not planned, but rather as a potential, probably likely, harbinger of much more complex and numerous threats facing a dumbed-down and defenseless United States today. America's biggest bankster, at least openly, Jerome Powell, chairman of the Fed, appeared on 60 Minutes recently and essentially lied through his teeth. But while that's not a surprise, some of the specifics probably are. Listen first to the setup from sycophant Scott Pelley.
Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, may have just rescued the economy from inflation without throwing millions out of work.
All hail the gods of Mount Olympus. Well, that is, if you believe the official numbers, and you shouldn't.
When Americans were suffering through the highest inflation in 40 years, Powell's Fed raised interest rates 11 times to cool the economy. Economists expected a recession, but now inflation is tumbling while employment is near a 50-year high.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thursday, we met Powell for a rare interview.
But we promised him softballs and plenty of CYA, and we both delivered.
Is inflation dead?
I wouldn't go quite so far as that. What I can say is that inflation has come down really over the past year and fairly sharply over the past 6 months. We're making good progress.
And as long as we can keep a lid on any kind of an honest fourth estate, we think we can get away with it. At least until it's way too late, after the election and the shelves at Walmart are empty. Before we get to the heart of the matter, here comes another big lie.
The Federal Reserve was empowered in the Great Depression to regulate the economy by controlling the supply of money.
Oops, actually it was 1913, prior to World War I, when the end of constitutional money really took place. And what's known as the Creature from Jekyll Island, thank you G. Edward Griffin, was empowered to put a wooden stake in what was left of the concept of honest weights and measures, and the idea of unlimited powers that might be bound, as Jefferson put it, by the chains of the Constitution. But here's a major warning that the wheels may be just about to come off that wagon, and it involves a huge lie, courtesy of Pelley and Powell. And just to set this up, a quick reminder. Starting with COVID-19, the plandemic, the Zyklon B injection, and the literal destruction of commercial real estate all across some of the biggest blue-run cesspool cities in the country, primarily places like New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and others, commercial real estate has honestly never recovered. But then when you add to it what New York City is doing to prove to investors that you got no business dealing with a place where the rule of law is literally a whim that we can disregard and then steal your stuff whenever we feel like it, commercial real estate, folks, is in dire, and I mean terminal trouble in the United States. As Martin Armstrong essentially put it not too long ago, New York in particular may be about to go no bid, and ultimately, last one to leave, turn out the lights. So here's the question that comes as close as Scott Pelley did to an actual fastball.
The value of commercial office buildings all across the country is dropping as people work from home.
Notice all the things he didn't say? Oh, well.
Those buildings support the balance sheets of banks all across the country. What is the likelihood of another real estate-led banking crisis?
I don't think that's likely. We looked at the larger banks' balance sheets, and it appears to be a manageable problem.
We bailed them out before, remember? And we're not about to let our puppet masters go down this time either. But we certainly learned not to ever call it a bailout again. Let's hear the whole whopper, though.
We looked at the larger banks' balance sheets, and it appears to be a manageable problem. There's some smaller and regional banks that have concentrated exposures in these areas that are challenged. And, you know, we're working with them.
You believe it's a manageable problem?
I think it
appears
to be.
We're not going to see bank failures across the country as we did in 2008.
I don't think there's much risk of a repeat of 2008.
No, this time around will make 2008 look like that first attack on the World Trade Center that everybody's forgotten about.
Certainly there will be some banks that have to be closed or merged out of existence because of this. That'll be smaller banks, I suspect, for the most part.
And there it is. and you might let that slide if you didn't recognize just how serious the situation actually is. And while this is something your host has been talking about for literally multiple years now, the update that comes next is courtesy of Wine Press News that says Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell conceded earlier this month that he and the feds, along with the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, are aware of and monitoring a number of banks that are likely to fail sometime in the near future, primarily due to their overexposure to CRE, or commercial real estate, and losses. As a matter of fact, folks, huge losses, because a lot of these buildings are just plain empty and never likely to be occupied again. Losses on their balance sheet, and in part, yep, it is because of higher interest rates, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. The problem is, if nobody wants to rent these things anyway, and between offices and restaurants and downtown stores and the cesspools, it becomes a very much vicious circle, particularly when out-of-control crime puts a wooden stake in what's left of them, especially when the rates are so high that you can't possibly turn a profit or even reduce incredible losses, you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and therein lies the rub. The entire commercial real estate market in the United States, like it or not, and let's go Brandon, has been turned into an albatross, or worse. And as the Wine Press News story notes, during a Senate Banking Committee hearing earlier this month, Powell acknowledged all of that, but said it is the medium and small regional banks that are affected. No! Pay no attention to that great big bank behind the curtain. Federal data, says the piece, unfortunately betrays Powell's words that it's not only the regional banks that are most affected by an overexposure to CRE and bogus loans that will never be repaid. On March 7th, the same day Powell gave his testifying to the Senate Banking Committee, the FDIC issued their own public meeting and contradicted Powell's words, saying that it's actually the large institutions, you know the names, that also have heavy exposure to commercial real estate and that are also, very much in a whole heap of trouble. Here's how Chairman Martin Grunberg put it during his announcement at the FDIC quarterly bank profile in the fourth quarter of last year, in which he stated, quote, the increase in non-current loan balances was greatest among the CRE loans and credit cards. Weak demand for office space, gee, do you think, has softened property values, and higher interest rates are affecting credit quality and refinancing ability of office and other types of commercial real estate loans. As a result, the non-current rate for non-owner occupied CRE loans is now at its highest level since the first quarter of 2014, driven by portfolios at, are you sitting down, the largest banks. There are lots of charts that follow, basically making the same point, but essentially, since 2022, past due loans on commercial real estate at the largest banks, those with more than $250 billion in assets, as of the end of 2023, are at 4.11%, which turns out to be 1 2/3% higher than at the end of the fourth quarter of the fateful year 2008, when banks were exploding all over Wall Street during what was called the then financial crisis. And, continues Jacob M. Thompson for Wine Press News, the Fed's also doing something else related to the growing losses at U.S. banks that should be deeply concerning. It has stopped providing the aggregated quarterly data, I guess if you don't like it, don't publish the data, on the loan loss reserves at commercial banks, something it had previously done quarterly since 1984. What an ironically appropriate year. Fed charts now come up with the words discontinued. And our concern, says the author, is that the largest banks, and by the way, according to the Federal Reserve, at the end of last year, there were only 13 banks in the United States with consolidated assets in that above $250 billion category. In any case, our concern, says the author, is that the largest banks are now woefully under-reserved given their potential commercial real estate, or even real estate in general, losses. Here's a chart with just some of the numbers, in more or less order. J.P. Morgan is exposed to the tune of $1.4 trillion. Bank of America, $1.1 trillion. Citigroup, kind of a piker, just under $1 trillion. And Wells Fargo, about 2/3 of $1 trillion. And here's how the Visual Capitalist put it. The six largest U.S. banks saw delinquent commercial property loans nearly triple to $9.3 billion in 2023 amid, you know it, don't you, high vacancy rates and increased borrowing costs. Today, the sector is facing greater scrutiny from regulators amid growing risks, gee, do you think, to bank stability. In fact, for almost half of all U.S. banks, commercial real estate debt is the largest loan category overall. And while commercial loans are more heavily concentrated in small small U.S. banks, several major financial institutions have amassed significant commercial loan portfolios. By the way, one of the smaller of those 13, and the chart makes this clear, New York Community Bank has recently had its credit rating lowered by Moody's to junk status. Says author Thompson, it appears that the data certainly suggests Powell is being disingenuous in his claims both to the Senate and to the nation. Which, of course, and this just extends the irony, folks, is not to discount the reality that many medium and small regional banks are really also in deep kimchi. Again, notes the visual capitalist, there is roughly $5.7 trillion in commercial real estate debt outstanding, and U.S. banks hold approximately half of that total on their balance sheets. And as your host, folks, let me ask this question in the current context. Would you like to be a major or even a small regional bank underwriting a whole bunch of commercial real estate loans in, say, the Baltimore metro area today? Two more items from the piece. Earlier this month, New York Federal Reserve Board member Scott Reckler said in a paper that he expects roughly 500 or so banks to fail over the next couple of years, largely because of their CRE exposures. And to make matters worse, the Federal Reserve has abruptly ended their so-called emergency bailout program as of this month. It's called the Bank Term Funding Program, or BTFP, which provided, past tense, lines of credit for banks who needed extra liquidity to cover withdrawals and net losses on their balance sheet. And an increasing number of banks, says the story, were still taking advantage of the program up until the BTFP was terminated. As he wraps up the piece, Thompson really pulls out the stops and says, as I've oft pointed out, if you needed me to do so again, Jerome Powell or any one of these bankster gangsters, as he put it correctly, are trained stone-cold liars. They won't flinch or blink when telling a lie. Truth be told, we knew that the mega banksters definitely had plenty of commercial real estate exposure, but the evidence and admission given by the FDIC clearly contradicts the notion that this problem is limited to only the regional banks. On the contrary, it is affecting banks of all sizes. And last year around this time, he noted, amidst the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and a wave of international contagion that spread because of it, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was called upon to give answers during a Senate Banking Committee hearing, during which time Yellen made an important admission, basically revealing that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury will set in motion measures to bail out and rescue the so-called too-big-to-fail and, as we know, folks, too-big-to-jail banks, or any institution that the Fed feels is big enough, and that means they wield enough power over the members there, of significant importance to them, in other words, but small and medium banks had better not expect such favorable treatment. Said Yellen, quote, a bank only gets that treatment if a super majority of the Fed board and I, in consultation with the president, you know, the fake guy or at least those pulling his puppet strings, conclude that failure to protect uninsured depositors would create systemic risk to the banking system. And she went on to explain that other banks, like Signature Bank, another bank that collapsed in the tidal wave caused by the fall of SVB, and oh, by the way, did you hear this? Just this week, what an amazing coincidence, Sam Bankster Fraud, SBF, you know, the head honcho at SVB, and the second biggest Democrat donor of all time, was convicted of what was called by the court one of the biggest financial frauds in American history and sentenced to 25 years at Club Fed. What do you bet he'll get a better penthouse suite than Peter Navarro will? But still, if he knows what's good for him, he'd better make sure those TV cameras in his cell are working. Back to Jacob M. Thompson's conclusion here. Yellen was telling us what some of us have already been warning about. She's now joining the chorus. Forecasting in advance what is intended to occur. You and I, he says, will be forced to bail out these so-called too-big-to-fail banksters while your own little bank can go eat dirt and be forced to shutter its doors only to be consolidated by one of the mega banks. In this coming wave of bank failures that we'll see this year and into 2025, one, if not more, of these mega banks will be sacrificed, similar to how Lehman Brothers, remember them, was sacrificed on the altar during the Great Recession back towards 2008. From what I've been hearing, says Thompson, from a number of analysts, it would seem that the Bank of America might be the sacrificial cow that gets slaughtered, but I guess we'll have to just wait and see. Bottom line, and for the umpteenth time, and he is not alone on this, folks, I think this is sage counsel, get your money out of these places, and of course, if you know what's really at hand, get yourself out of fiat currencies altogether, especially the almighty fake dollar. Keep only the amounts you need to maintain a balance, pay bills, maybe make some purchases, but keep most of it out of the fake fiat coming down around your ankles system. In the eventuality that your bank collapses and or is hit with bank runs, and of course, ultimately, you know what's coming. Scripture warns us about it. It's called the central bank digital currency, complete big brother control, and also known as the mark of the beast. So again, don't be fooled. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.